talk that I will give today is based on an ongoing work with our advisor. And it deals with some ideas about of Waldrop and Rose, about the nature of the electron, about the origin of mass of the standard model of particle physics, and also in the on the bipolar wave theory of the Brayton bulb. And I should say in the beginning that so everything that I shared that might sound a bit too crazy, but that's my entire responsibility, so I take all the blame for it. Okay. So if I had to summarize my talk in only one question, I would say that it would be this one. So how does the electron move? And this question, as far as I know, you can only address it in the bipolar wave theory of the Brayton bulb. And of course, it has been addressed a long time ago, and today I hope to offer a different kind of answer. And I also hope that it might have some repercussion when it comes to test standard quantum mechanics against the Brayton bipolar wave theory, especially in regards to Valentini's idea of quantum non-equilibrium. Okay. So in the beginning, I will first give a brief overview of the Brayton bipolar wave theory. So how does it work for the non-relativistic case? How can you extend it to quantum field theory? And the major thing that I will point out in this section is that all the bipolar wave theory that have been built for quantum field theory, they rely on the bare particle ontologies. So they attribute elements of reality to particles, but these are not the everyday particles. These are the bare particle from which the dress particles are made up. And then I'll show that if you push this idea to its logical conclusion, and if you consider the situation in the standard model of particle physics, then you should consider all the fermions as being fundamentally massless. And now if you look at the Dirac equation, and if you put the mass equal to zero in the Dirac equation, you see that the Dirac equation splits in a pair of Weyl equations. And so these Weyl particles are described by two component spinors. And now even if you consider the case where the mass is different from zero, you can think of the Dirac electron as being made of two Weyl particles. And this will be, well, this corresponds to the idea of Waldrop and Rose. So one of these two Weyl particles being called the zinc and the other one being called the zinc. And I'll try to see what it means in the bipolar wave theory. And in the end, I will say a few things about why I think that this is important for quantum non-equilibrium. Okay. So, in this non-relativistic, the Brayton bipolar wave theory, if you have a system of capital N particles, these N particles, they would be completely described by a wave function, psi tx, and also by the position of all the N particles, where xt, this would be a point in a configuration space of dimension 3n. And as far as the equation of motion go, so psi tx would always evolve according to the Schrödinger equation. And it can also be used in order to define a velocity field on the configuration space of dimension 3n. So in order to build this velocity field, you just take the standard quantum mechanical current, you divide it by psi squared, and if you plug in the actual position of the particle, the velocity of your system at time t. The next thing that you have to consider is an ensemble of particles, a quantum ensemble. So if you could consider an ensemble in the standard interpretation of quantum mechanics, so each element of the ensemble would be described by the same wave function. On the other hand, if you consider an ensemble in the double bomb pilot wave theory, each element would be described by a wave function, but also by by the actual position of the particles. And if you look at all the elements of the ensemble, so this particle position would have some distribution. And in principle, this distribution of the wet particle, of the wet position over the ensemble, has nothing to do with psi squared. So these are two different concepts. But it's only if these positions are distributed according to psi squared for all time, t, that you would reproduce the predictions of standard quantum mechanics. And now, the equation of motion, they have this property that if you start from an ensemble in which the positions are distributed according to psi squared at some time t, they will be described according to psi squared for any later time t prime. And this is simply a consequence of a mathematical consequence of the fact that you use j to define your velocity field, and that j is part of a continuity equation. And now this special distribution, rho is equal to psi squared, it is referred to as the quantum equilibrium distribution, because once you are in it, you stay in it for any later time. Okay, but now you could also consider ensembles in which the positions are not distributed according to psi squared. So this would be an example. So these are the elements of the ensemble, and each time you see that the position of the particle is in the, let's say, the left-hand side of the packet. And this would be a non-equilibrium distribution. And if this special ensemble had existed at some, let's say, at some point in the history of the universe, the only way to explain that we don't see them around us is that you have this process of relaxation to quantum equilibrium. And so Anthony Valentini and Hans did some simulation in 2005 in order to support this idea that if you start from an ensemble which is in a non-equilibrium distribution, that it would relax to quantum equilibrium. So here's a schematic view of the simulation. On the top row you have psi squared for time t equals 0, time t equal to pi, time t equal 4 pi. And on the second row, you have the evolution of the non-equilibrium distribution. So you see at time t equal to 0, the distribution is different from psi squared. But as you let this non-equilibrium distribution evolve, and if you do some coarse grading, then you have... Well, this numerical simulation illustrates this process of relaxation to quantum equilibrium. And this quantum non-equilibrium is interesting because that's one of the only ways that the pilot wave theory could be tested against standard quantum mechanics. So again, that's an idea suggested by Valentini, that you might have very exotic particles that have been in non-equilibrium at the early stage of the universe, but are still in non-equilibrium today. And if you find these particles, you could... Well, they would not reproduce the prediction of standard quantum mechanics. For instance, if you do some interference experiment with this metallic non-equilibrium particle, and let's say the non-equilibrium distribution has support in this region, that's the kind of interference pattern that you would observe. Okay, so that's the non-relativistic case. So now I will consider the first quantized equation in the case of how to extend these models for quantum field theory. So the simplest case is the case of the Dirac equation. And it's very easy. So you have the Dirac equation. You have a conserved four current. J0, the density is positive. J0 and three components of J nu are part of the continuity equation. So you have all the ingredients that you need in order to do a pilot wave theory. The only thing that you have to do is to say that the velocity of the particle is given by the three the special Yeah, the usual current divided by J by J zero. And so this ensures that if you start from quantum equilibrium, you would have quantum equilibrium for any data type. Now these ideas can also be extended to quantum field theory, and you have various proposals. One is the Dirac-C approach, so it works for fermion. So you also have the particle and antiparticle approach. So one model is due by Dirac-Constant, Timur-Kaim-Zhang-Yi. You also have the field approach, it works for bosons. And so in the rest, I will be concerned with these two proposals. And I will consider the simple case of the beta decay. So you have a neutron that goes to a proton plus the electron plus the anti-neutrino. So if you describe this process in the Dirac-C pilot wave model, so in the beginning, the C corresponding to the down quark is filled. The same for the U quark. The C corresponding to the electron is filled. The C corresponding to the electronic neutrino is filled, and you just add two down quark on top of it of positive energy, and one up quark of positive energy on top of it. And now the final state. So all the C are again filled except for the electronic neutrino. Because you have an anti-neutrino in the end, so it corresponds as a hole in the C. So you have an electron, you have two of these U quark, and you also have a down quark. And if you look, if you count the total number of fermions, and if you use proper regularization procedures, you would see that the total number of fermions is conserved. So basically, in order to do a pilot wave theory, you can do, it's almost as if you would have to do like the pilot wave theory for the many body Dirac equation. And this is a deterministic model. So on the other hand, if you consider the same process in the DGTZ model, so in the beginning you have, so you don't use the C's at all, you just use particles and antiparticles. So you have two of these down quark, one U quark, and then in the final state you have down quark, two U quark, one electron, and one anti-neutrino. So you see that the total number of particles is not conserved. But there is a way to deal with this in the pilot wave theory, well, at least in their model. Because they allow for some stochastic jumps between different sectors of the configuration space. So here, for instance, there would be some probability to jump from one sector of the configuration space describing two down quark and a new quark to another sector of the configuration space describing the particles that you have in the out state. Now the thing that I want to point out is that, as it looks, it may look very easy, but it's far from being the case. Because all these theories, as I pointed out in the beginning, they use what I call the bare particle ontology. So all these theories, they make use of the Schrödinger equation. And if you look at the Hamiltonian, this Hamiltonian would involve particle creators, particle annihilators, but the operators which are inside the Hamiltonian, they create bare particles. They do not create dressed particles. So the corresponding ontology that you build would be a bare particle ontology. And also, if you think about classical models of self-energy, there are some issues that you have to face, for instance. A bare particle, if you think about it classically, let's say a bare electron, if you think about it classically, you could picture it as being a small ball of very small radius. And then you could compute the self-energy contribution that this small ball creates. And if you sum the bare mass plus the self-energy contribution, the only way to have a small finite dwarf mass in the end is if the bare mass is negative. But this is not how it works in the standard model. So in the standard model of particle physics, so the X field is at the origin of all the masses of the fermion. And so the fermions are coupled to the X field with some Yukawa potential, and it's only if you do like an expansion around this point, so the zero of the term would correspond to giving the mass to the fermions, and all the rest would correspond to interaction between the fermions and the X. So you should really think about all the fermions as being fundamentally masses. And also this process, the condensation of the X field, it takes some very, very small time to occur. Okay, now if we really have to think about the fermions as being fundamentally massless, the easiest thing that we can do is start from the Dirac equation and put the mass equal to zero in it. So if you do this, and if you use some representation of the gamma matrices, which is called the Weyl representation, and if you decompose the four Dirac spinor as two component spinor, psi L and psi right, you would see that the Dirac equation decouples in a pair of Weyl equation. And the index L and R are going to be cleaned in the next session. So if you look for now for the free eigenstates of the free solutions of the Weyl equation, the easiest thing is to define this operator, that's the MCT. So you just project the spin along the direction of momentum, and you divide by the norm. And so URB, that would be a right-handed spin-off, and ULB, that would be the left-handed spin-off. So now let's look at these two Weyl equations. So you have the one that involves psi R. And it's easy to see that if you look for the free solution of this equation, all the positive energy solution need to be right-handed. On the other hand, all the negative energy solution need to be left-handed. So you also have a conserved for current, and the density associated to this current is negative. Now if you consider the other Weyl equation, so the situation is reversed. All the positive energy solution would be left-handed, and all the negative energy solutions would be right-handed. And you also have a four conserved current, J mu L, but this time it involves this tile sigma. So sigma zero, that's just the 2x2 identity matrix. Sigma one, sigma two, sigma three, these are the usually Pauli matrices. For sigma tilde, sigma tilde zero, that's again that's the unit 2x2 matrix, and the component 1, 2, and 3, these are minus the usual Pauli matrices. And now the easiest first easy thing that one can do is to look at the pilot wave theory for a single Weyl fermion, and you could consider that the R case or the L case. It doesn't really matter, so you have this conserved four current. You can define the velocity just as you do according to the standard prescription. But this time you would find out that for this Weyl fermion, they always move at the speed of light. So in the pilot wave theory, if you do a pilot wave theory for a Weyl fermion, the Weyl fermion would always move at the velocity of light. This is not the case for the massless Dirac electron. If you do a finite wave interpretation for the Dirac equation, in which you put mass equal to zero, then you would not have this result that the velocity of the massless Dirac particle moves luminally at all times. And so this picture illustrates the kind of trajectories that you have for this Dirac fermions. So this is for a superposition of three eigenstates of momentum. They all have positive energy. And if I remember correctly, their energies are slightly different. And so if you change slightly the position of your initial Weyl fermion, you see that they would take this kind of path, and that this path would change very quickly if you change the initial conditions. Well, now we know how these Weyl fermions move, and what I would like to understand is how can the Dirac electron be represented in terms of these Weyl fermions. And here is how you do it. You start from the massive Dirac Lagrangian. You split, so all these would be the Dirac spinors. You split these in psi L and psi R. You switch to the Hamiltonian formalism. You quantize the theory. So the Hamiltonian that you would get would contain the creation and annihilation of operators that create and annihilate Weyl particles. So you have your Hamiltonian. And if you ask, so which state does correspond to the Dirac electron? Well, that's simple. You just look at the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. So here's just a few details of the procedure. So after you have quantized the theory, so this operator psi R, it would annihilate positive energy Weyl particle of which are right-handed, and it would also annihilate negative energy Weyl particle which are this time left-handed. For the other operator, psi L, that's the reverse. So you would create annihilate positive energy particles which are left-handed, and annihilate negative energy particles which are right-handed. And now, if you look at the Hamiltonian, the free Hamiltonian, so that's the one that you get when you put the mass equal to zero. You simply add that the free Hamiltonian is the number of positive energy particles, let's say of momentum p multiplied by p, and here the minus sign for the negative energy particle. And now if you look at the interaction Hamiltonian, here's how the interaction Hamiltonian looks. So it would annihilate a positive energy Weyl particle of some definite helicity chi, and it would create the negative energy Weyl particle of the same helicity. And of course the corresponding term, because the Hamiltonian is the emission conjugate of this one. So if you want to obtain the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, since the momentum is conserved, the helicity is not changed either. So basically, you simply have to diagonalize a 2x2 matrix. Which is this one. And the eigenvalues would be given by the square root of p squared plus n squared, or minus the square root of p squared plus n squared. And this would correspond to the Dirac electron. So now this is in line with the idea that first. So now the the positive energy Dirac electron would be, if you consider one which is right-handed, it would be a superposition of positive energy right-handed Weiss spinor plus negative energy right-handed Weiss spinor. And this state zero W, that would be the state that doesn't contain positive energy Weyl particle, neither negative energy particles. And then, if you use these ideas of Dirac-Einstein to Milkaeus-Runge, it's easy to build a pilot wave theory for this electron, in which you jump from two different kinds of motion. So you have one type of motion that would correspond to this part of the state, and the other type of motion that would correspond to this part of the state. And this would be described by this part of the state would be described by a four current that contains the index R, while this part of the state would correspond to a four current that contains the index L.
There's an
order
of both places.
Yes.
You said L now.
No, okay. So you have to know if you. Well, you see that these are reversed in the. So basically, these are the two fields. So you see that the index R and L are reversed in the operator. So now if you. If I want to select this part, I have to project with this one. On the other hand, if I want to select this one, I have to. Sorry. Yes, this one over here. So these two parts of the state correspond to two different different five fields. And so in this pilot wave theory, you would jump from two kinds of motion, say the zig and the zag motion. And each time the motion of the electron would be luminal. So if you want to think about this process in a space-time representation, so that's how the massive electron would be described. So let's say you start from the zig motion, this one that corresponds to the state. At some point you jump and you go to the zag motion, but at each time the motion is luminal, so you move along the line code. You do this and this, and now if you do some kind of course bending, you can have the impression that the electron moves with a velocity which is less than the velocity of light. And so this, as I said, this corresponds to the what Penrose described in his book, The Road to Reality. Maybe the interpretation is slightly different, but he has something like this in mind. And what I have shown gives a very precise meaning to the claim that he makes. So why is all this relevant? So the way that the electron move in the pilot wave theory is going to be relevant for this process of relaxation to quantum equilibrium that I mentioned in the beginning. So here is another thing that we have illustrated in 2010 is the fact that if you consider the de Broglie pilot wave theory, you can include spin terms in the guidance equation. And these spin terms influence the process of relaxation to quantum equilibrium. And here, if you describe these Dirac electron using this notion of zig and zag motion, and if you think about these trajectories for the Weyl particle, you can also imagine that this would have some influence for the process of relaxation to quantum equilibrium. But this is something that needs to be done. Okay. So in summary, so I ought to have pointed out initially that all the pilot wave quantum field theories that have been proposed so far, they rely on a bare particle ontology. So they attribute an element of reality to bare particles, not to the dress particles that are observed in the laboratory. And now if you take this idea seriously, and if you think about the standard model of particle physics and how the fermions get their mass, you should really think about all the fermions as being fundamentally massless. And now, the next step in this program would be to study the relaxation from quantum non-equilibrium to quantum equilibrium and see what this idea is going to bring there. Thanks. Okay.